The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show. Hey everyone, welcome to the show, Your Money with David Hayes. It's a beautiful day, right? On this Thursday, early June, you couldn't have dialed it up any better. Last night, on Wednesday night, it was equally as gorgeous as I tooled around town doing a few errands and arranging my firework pickup, which will be on Thursday night, tonight. So tonight, I'll be buying my fireworks. I've had many messages from neighbors, and yes, the Hayes Family Fireworks Show will go on, as always. We didn't cancel in 2020. I joked that I wasn't part of the cancel culture. We did not cancel in 2021, although we were very careful and cautious, don't get me wrong, back in 2020. And, of course, we are full throttle this year, so we're very excited. 4th of July, Independence Day, is one of my favorite, if not the favorite, holiday in the year. Christmas is always overwhelming to me, although I enjoy the reason for the season, of course. But 4th of July, something special about that, and I'm looking extremely forward to it. Let's do a little bit of news or numbers by the week brought to you by Lance Like of the Like Law Group. Of course, as always, give yourself and your family the peace of mind that comes with proper estate planning. Call Lance at the Like Law Group, 812-323-8300. Kenny Bland Auctions, they are your full service auction service. They offer everything. So I'm not even going to get into the pre-planning, the sale of your estate or real estate. That's just one of many. They have cool auctions. Please go to KennyBlandAuctions.com and see what I'm talking about. And finally, old Tim Dumas over at Full Unrivaled Electric. He wants to be your electrical contractor like he is mine. He is a veteran, and he puts in generators, like I mentioned last week on the show, how my generator was being put to use while I was out of town and my son was home alone. But give him a call at 812-361-3604 or find them on Facebook. All right, last week I talked about this, but the 10-year budget forecast released by the Congressional Budget Office, which is a nonpartisan group, on May 25th predicts that over the next decade, the government will collect $56.5 trillion in tax revenues. I don't know how they predict that. They will spend $72.2 trillion. That's assuming no bailouts, no aid to additional aid to other countries, whatever. So that is netting a $15.7 trillion deficit over the next 10 years. That is on top of the $30.5 trillion of debt we already have. And if I'm still lucky enough to be sitting here 10 years from now at age 62, I will try to remember to report back how they were wrong. And they're never low. They're low on spending. Right? They're never high on the spending side. They're in their predictions. They're always much, much higher. Talking about how America doesn't deal with anything until there's a crisis right in front of us, Social Security is one of them, right? There's just no appetite to do anything right now with Social Security. And I have been talking with people in Congress who know they need to deal with this, but no one's willing to step forward and start the discussion of how to fix it. But Social Security trustees did announce on June 2nd the trust fund backing payments of Social Security would be exhausted in the year 2034. Now, a zero trust fund does not mean the payments of Social Security would stop. They would drop to about 77% of the original amount promised. Now, keeping in mind, to my point earlier, how they always get this wrong, the trustees released the report in 2007, and I remember talking about this at a program through the Center for Lifelong Learning, and we were doing it through Indiana, I think, at the time, at Fountain Square. I was talking about this back then. They said in 2007, the trust fund would be depleted in 2042, not 2034, which means it's likely to be even sooner than that. The estimated Social Security shortfall today between the future taxes anticipated being collected and the future benefits expected to be paid out over the next 75 years is $20.4 trillion. The entire $24 trillion deficit could be eliminated by immediately increasing the Social Security payroll tax by 3.24%. And that's from the 12.4 it is now to 15.64%. Now, you might be saying, I don't pay that much to Social Security through my payroll. No, you don't. You pay half of that. Your employer pays the other half. If you're self-employed, you pay both of that, both sides. And this is where I remember back in a former administration, a few back, where they talked about privatizing Social Security, letting people take that 15% and do something different with it. Can you imagine if you personally could put 15% of your pay away between you and your employer at the ripe age of 16 when you first start paying in, how much money you would have? That was the argument. But then there's other arguments that have to be factored in as well. What about Medicare? Medicare covers 63.8 million Americans. That's 19% of our population, and will continue to get larger and larger, especially when you dive into the baby boomers, right? We have 10 to 11,000 people a day turning 65 in this country. Well, the program was, obviously, this is a payroll tax as well. The program was cash positive in 2021, taking in $888 billion of income. That included $5 billion of interest income, even at low rates. Paid out $839 billion in benefits. So why is Medicare more solid than Social Security? Well, with Social Security, we only pay tax up to a certain wage. In Medicare, that's not the way it works. Existing home prices are starting to slow down, especially in those higher numbers. You know, $600,000, $700,000, $800,000 around here, starting to slow down a little bit. But existing home prices in the U.S. have risen 43 consecutive quarters through the end of the first quarter 2022. Look for that to decline. I've told you this in previous programs. Why? Interest rates go up. People can afford less. Prices, therefore, start to come down. Demand comes down. Prices come down on, you know, materials and all that stuff. So if you don't have to buy right now, just sit back and wait. I know you might be thinking, but what if I want to sell? Well, go ahead and sell. But then you're going to have to move somewhere else because you're just swapping high value for high value, and you have a commission to pay in between. This is interesting because I did go to the gas pump the other day, and you know, it's kind of a joke between Hughes and I of why we only put $20 in our gas tank. It's not because I, you know, think that gas prices will be lower tomorrow and I'll get a better deal. I just did it because I was always in a hurry. When my tank went to 0 miles to empty and it starts flashing at me, you have to pull over. I'm usually on my way someplace. So I would just simply flip in, quickly put enough gas in, $20 seemed to be good enough, and get me going. And that would last me about a half a week, generally speaking. Well, that's not the case anymore. I stopped at my little local place that I get fuel, and it was completely empty. And it was on Saturday, and I wasn't in a big hurry. So I filled it up. I actually turned the pump on, kind of rubbed some bugs off my window, just did some things, and all of a sudden it clicked off. And when it did, I didn't put $20 in. I put $83 in my gas tank. And I'm like, so I walk in, you know, and I'm grateful to be able to have the resources to pay that. Do I want to pay it? No. Does anyone? No. But I walked in, I'm talking to the guy, and I'm like, man, this is incredible. It was $5.25, by the way. That was the price of fuel. Per gallon for the 87. And anyway, I walk in, I talk to the guy. I'm like, hey, man, this is crazy. He goes, oh, I know. I said, you know, I can afford it. You know, it stinks, but I'm going to pay it. And I said, but what about, you know, that lady? She was out there in a kind of a rusty, beat-up car, had a car seat in the back, had another toddler in the front seat. And I'm like, that has got to be destroying her. And it is. It is. And that's why we're starting to see revolving debt in the United States increase. We are starting to see it increase at a rapid rate. In fact, when you look at the last 12 months, it reached $1.04 trillion. That's not the highest it's ever been, but pretty darn close. But it's a $124 billion increase from the year before. Now, granted, the year before is 2020, you know, no one was doing anything. But here's what happens, right? Gas prices go up. Discretionary spending goes down, means the things that you can do without. That's why, you know, you start saying, I don't think I really need that Netflix. I don't think I need that Disney Plus. I don't even need ESPN Plus, which is one of my favorites. I'm going to get rid of that. So the subscriptions start to go. These discretionary items start to go. And guess what? That's the way it always goes. And now we get to the point where, most of my paycheck is being ate up by childcare and gas, which is real for many, many people. So guess where they go? They go to the credit card. And here we sit in 2022, June, and I'm not saying anything but the truth that this is going to get worse, not better. We're going to have Rod on in a minute because I have never seen Rod have a pessimistic mindset ever. But the last month or two, he has been talking to me in the hallway and in my office and our little check-ins here and there about what's going on, and you're going to hear from him in just a few minutes. But more importantly, not just what's going on, but what you need to do about it. And then finally, of course, everyone knows it's hard to find people. I thought this was kind of funny. That's why I threw it in. Wet and Wild, Phoenix. Yes, it's hot there, right? Phoenix is offering $2,500 in incentive pay to attract lifeguards. I'm like, man, this would be awesome. I remember blacktop ceiling driveways when I was in high school. Not even close to getting any incentive except for chemical burns on my legs. $500 with their first paycheck, on top of their first paycheck. And then if they work all summer, so delayed gratification, all the way to the end of the pool season, they'll get an extra $2,000 on their very last paycheck. So folks, if you don't hear from me next week, that means I'm in Phoenix being a lifeguard. All right, I'll be right back. Let's get Rod on the phone, talk about where we are today, where what he's feeling, what he's seeing, and really more than importantly, what does it mean to you? We'll be back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. It's Your Money with David Hayes on this beautiful Thursday in South Central Indiana. And sitting over at the ranch, as we refer to it, is Rod Holloway. Of course, you can hear him on Mondays and Fridays with Glass in the Afternoon. And Hot Rod, before you came on, I said to people, you know, I've never really heard Rod in the nearly, 25, 26, 27 years of you and I working together, to be overly pessimistic or have a sentiment that seems a little bit negative. But, you know, we've been talking about this, that the market right now, and I'm not saying you personally, but your gauge on what's happening, is that pessimism, the mood is deepening. And a poll of Americans find that the dim views over the economy in society have some societal fictions. There was a survey that came out, how satisfied would you say you are with your present financial situation? It's at historic lows. Do you feel people like you and your family have a good chance of improving your standard of living with the way things are now in America? The answer is no. Just a sharp rise. I mean, it was completely opposite, really, from the 1990s all the way through, you know, last year. The answer typically was, you know, yes. But now there's many, many more no's than there are yeses. And that means something, right?
Yeah, most certainly does. I mean, because a lot of what drives the market in the very short term, of course, is sentiment. The market has certain expectations that it looks for as far as the future. It will invest or divest accordingly on what that future is, and then it adjusts based on the reality of those fundamentals. But until we get to the fundamentals, that sentiment is what plays a heavy role in that. And that's part of why what we've been discussing, that in addition to the Fed raising interest rates to offset inflation, part of what has to happen is the market has to come down. People have to feel less wealthy to slow their spending down. Because there are certain groups out there that while they don't like the increased cost of goods that they're buying on a regular basis, they have the kind of wealth that it's not going to change their lifestyle, that they don't need to. But many of them will change their lifestyle on their own just by feeling less wealthy. So even though wealth and access to cash and capital isn't a problem for them, it doesn't mean that they don't adjust. And then obviously when you look at the low portion of the income scale, they don't have a choice but to make choices on, do I buy this or do I buy that? Because I can no longer afford to buy both of these things. So you have people being forced into it. And this is a big part of what Glass and I have been talking about over the last few weeks, that potentially we are setting ourselves up for a false sense of security that the consumer is doing better than maybe he really is, because right now the consumer has excess savings, so they have extra savings to fall back on to help cushion the blow of these higher prices along the way, in addition to the fact that we also, I think, have a false sense of a very strong jobs market. And I wouldn't call it a bad jobs market, but let's be honest. Right now, all we're doing is getting the jobs back that were taken away from the pandemic. We still have fewer people working now than we did pre-pandemic. So it's hard to say that this is a growing, robust jobs economy. Thankfully, we are adding jobs consistently. Otherwise, we'd be in a much worse place than what we are. But I don't consider it jobs growth when really all we're doing is putting people back to work who lost their job due to a pandemic.
It's funny, Rob, because we were real proud in giving raises across the board at our office to our support staff, and they've been through, they're great, you know, and we gave a nice raise, like 5 or I think 6% even, and thought we were being super generous, and the numbers come out, it's like, yeah, you know, maybe that 6% wasn't enough to satisfy people. Hey, you mentioned the savings and how the savings rate has plummeted because people have dipped back into that to pay for things they wanted to do, but also revolving debt, I mentioned in the news of the week. It's nearly at an all-time high as well, and it's only going to get worse as people, as I mentioned in the first segment you didn't get to hear, you know, when you're paying $5.25 a gallon for gasoline, you know, and you still need to go buy some other things, you're probably going to put it on the card, and that's just going to get worse. And again, all this just tends to dampen enthusiasm about what's going on. You know, I mentioned the satisfaction level is the lowest ever. Well, since I looked back to like 1986 or something like that, but I went back and looked again while you were talking. It's the highest level of dissatisfaction since they began asking the question every few years starting in 1972. Well, 72 was a rotten time when you're talking about the economy, the market. We had stagflation. We had all kinds of crazy things going on. I was 2 years old at the time. I don't remember much about the 70s except the late 70s, and that's when we were at the, my mom used to call it the unemployment office, where you would go get your, you'd actually go there and get your check. Like that, you actually physically walk, we'd weigh out in the car, mom would go in and get her check. I also remember the long lines to get gasoline. I remember being in the car and having to wait around the block because they would say you could only get gas on this day or that day. Thankfully, we're far away, hopefully, from that. But, you know, if you think about it in perspective and you widen your lens and you think, okay, this is the worst people have felt since 1972. I mean, this is something to keep an eye on. And before you came on, I'm like, this is the first time I've ever heard Rod. In all the years, I mean, it's real that, and you've been making some moves and changes and portfolios to sort of, you know, combat what's happening. Just comment on that thought for just a minute.
Yeah, sure. Well, part of my level of pessimism being up a little bit is the people who have the opportunity to attempt to make an immediate impact to what we're doing are politicians and people within bureaucratic offices. Well, as a good example, I think Janet Yellen is a good example. Very smart woman. I think she did fine at the Fed. Now she's the Treasury Secretary. Well, she comes out this week in testimony and says we used a wrong word in transitory. No, you didn't use a wrong word. You were completely wrong. But that's where a level of concern comes in, is that you don't know that you were 100% wrong, and you didn't think that injecting $3 trillion of money into the money supply would have an inflationary effect on it. Now, my more optimistic self deep down inside, which is who I really am and where I really lie, do believe that the private sector will solve this problem. The private sector will help alleviate the inflation side of things. The private sector will figure out what the problem is in employment, in which there are certain sectors that are struggling to get people to come to work within those jobs in that sector. They're going to do it probably via technology, robotics, AI, things like that. But that takes time. That also will probably have a bit of an inflationary effect, because part of that private sector taking over things is reducing the amount of globalization that we had already done. That doesn't mean everything's going to be made in America and we're going to take nothing from overseas, but I do believe that we're going to attempt to minimize being put in the position we're in now with certain sectors, chips being a primary one, in which we are so dependent on foreign countries to get that material, to get that product, to get that service, that I think we're going to bring some of that home and say, you know what, we'll still buy internationally, but we want a more robust ability to take care of things domestically for ourselves, so that if another country runs into an issue, China right now, who's choosing to fight COVID in a different way that keeps forcing them to shut down major cities and companies and disrupt supply chains off of that, well, we don't want to be subjected to what's going on in China that we have absolutely no control over. So these problems will be resolved, but it's going to take the private sector longer to do it than what the government thinks can be done. And all the while, I still have fear that government and bureaucratic agencies will attempt to implement things that they tell us are going to fix the problem, but will probably only add to the problem in the short run.
Most famously quoted by Ronald Reagan, most dangerous words you'll ever hear is, "Hello, I'm from the government, and I'm here to help." And that's Rod Holloway's first
certainly.
Rod, so what should ordinary, everyday people be doing about this besides just getting mad and frustrated and pessimistic and everything else? I mean, keep your nose down, right? Keep doing what you're doing, because like I said at the golf outing, you weren't able to be there because you had to be back at the office, but it was kind of a funny thing because, you know, here we are in the middle of a lot of stuff going on, and we had a bunch of people at the golf outing. It was fantastic, and I said, you know, I've been saying this my entire professional life, because we were talking about the weather, so we may get some storms coming in. And I said, I've been saying this my entire professional life. It's going to be okay. Just hang in there. It's going to be just fine. And everyone laughed. And I said, so just like the weather, trust me, it's going to be just fine. Even if it rains today, it's still going to be fine, because tomorrow will be sunny. The next day will be maybe better. You never know. So, Rod, I mean, the everyday person who's feeling all the things that you just described and I've commented on, what do they need to be doing?
Well, I think, number one, the people that are in the accumulation phase and the need to tap into the dollars they're accumulating or the wealth they're accumulating is still a long ways down the road. These are the types of things that are good for you. Now, of course, it's not fun or beneficial to see your monthly 401k continue to decline month after month, but you just have to keep reminding yourself that every paycheck that you are contributing to that 401k, you are buying more units with the same dollars today than what you did a year ago. That long-term will bode well for you. So those in accumulation phase don't need to worry much about it. Those that are approaching retirement or in retirement, you really need to take analysis of your portfolio, your asset allocation structure, how safe and secure is your income, and for how long do you have that income safe and secure. So you've always talked bucket strategies, Dave, and that's what you've utilized. And in the past, our now bucket probably was filled for a shorter amount of time. We've been discussing here in the office, hey, you know what? Instead of having a couple years in that now bucket, maybe we need to start looking at cranking that up to 3 to 5 years in the now bucket, so that we don't have to worry about what happens in the next 2 to 3 years from a perspective of generating that income on a monthly basis for our retirees. And then those that are approaching retirement, they need to begin setting up that bucket implementation strategy. And any bounces we get, if they are over allocated to equities and they don't have that now bucket or haven't started building it, take advantage of the bounces to start pulling it over. Now, be very cautious of waiting simply for a bounce. We've talked about this many a time. I'll use it in the analogy of an individual stock, and somebody buys a $50 stock and it goes to $25. And then their game plan is, when this stock gets back to $50, I will sell it then and then look for other opportunities. Sometimes you may never get back to $50, so you never find that other opportunity. So that's why I say, if you are way over invested in equities and retirement is approaching rapidly, you may have to go ahead and bite the bullet and start reallocating today. If you're not way overweighted in the equities and you feel fairly comfortable, then what you can do is take times that we have bounces, like a couple of weeks ago, 6% up in 1 week was a strong week. For those people that were over allocated to equities or feel the need to add to that now bucket, that would have been a good week to start peeling some of those dollars off the equity bucket. Well, this year's been been a struggle in the equity. Let's not forget what we've gotten in the last 5 to 10 years out of the equity market.
Right.
So those equity dollars are far, far higher than more than likely what your plan 10 years ago when you laid out and thought what you would have in that equity bucket. So don't get caught up just materially in the fact of what your equity account value is worth at the end of 2021 and think that, ooh, I've got to get back to there before I start this reallocation process, because there is always the possibility it could get even worse and you may have to reallocate at a lower level than what you're at right now.
Rod Holloway, everyone, I got to let you go, Rod. I got about 4 more segments to fit in, but I appreciate your insight as always. And, you know, when what we preach is sweep and keep. You know, we had, like you said, 20 and 20, we had some pretty strong years. And, you know, yeah, if you're only a couple years into a 10-year bucket, we probably didn't refill it. But if you were 5 years or less, why not take advantage of those big years? We take it, you know, and which is so counterintuitive to the way people really act, and that's to take the money. Yes, take it. But it's doing so good. No, it's not doing good. It did good. Let's take it out. Let's put it aside. Now we've built another 3-4 more years. Now we have 8 years to go. If you can have, you give me 10 years in the market, folks. I'm not going to say the word, the big G word, because I'm not allowed to on this. And I can actually prove to you with history that is not always the case. But you give us enough time in the market, Rod, we're pretty convinced we'll be okay at the end of the day.
Well, most certainly, and I think analyze what did you expect to get out of that long-term bucket. So if your expectation was to get 8% out of the equity bucket and you got 15, maybe just peel that extra 7% off, mm-hmm. you know, and let the rest of it ride. But you did a retirement analysis that said, if I make this much money with this allocation that I have here, I will achieve this particular goal of retirement. Well, don't allow greed to change that and let it ride and never bank some of those profits. So, yes, go ahead, take advantage of some of those outsized market returns that we have gotten and push those dollars aside. Doesn't mean you have to pull all the gains off. Like I said, if you expected to get 6 to 8% for the next 10 to 15 years, and you have a few years of getting way more than that, just take that extra off and let the rest of that long-term bucket ride. Because as you said, Dave, if you start looking at equities in 10, 15, 20-year increments, risk goes down considerably, and the potential for a positive return goes up considerably.
Rod Holloway, listen to him on Friday in the afternoon on Big Show Friday, just before happy hour. I believe it's the Trojan Horse happy hour, if I remember correctly. So, Rod, thanks as always, and I'll see you back at the shop.
Sounds good, Dave. Have a great show.
Thanks. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, what does America need? What about a big royal jubilee? Everyone seems so happy over in the UK. Maybe that's what we need. And then a little bit about the history of retirement. You know, retirement's not for everybody, and it's not the same as what our parents or grandparents certainly had or thought it would be. So when we come back, we'll have a little fun with that. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Of course, I'm not advocating for the restoration of a monarchy in the United States of America, right? No, I don't want that. I believe in the 250 years it'll be that we had our Declaration of Independence, just in a few years. But you know what? Maybe we just need an American jubilee, some kind of a royal jubilee, and that's what the 4th of July hopefully will be for us. Take time, have fun, cookouts, fireworks, you know what I mean? Just appreciate what we have, the freedoms we have, and just become happy. Because people that aren't happy, first of all, are miserable to be around, but two, help drag everything down. So like I mentioned, the pessimism, yeah, you can gripe and moan a little bit here and there with your wife or your husband at home. Maybe, you know, get mad at your kids behind doors or whatever. But you know what? Overall, just be happy. And if you be happy, then it's all good. So I was actually interested in sharing my thoughts on the history of retirement benefits. Because, you know, there was a time where you thought, well, why do you want to retire? Well, think about this from a geographic standpoint, or not geographics, from a demographic standpoint, excuse me. We used to have a lot more kids. You know, we talk about this a lot that, yeah, you know, the baby boomers had, you know, almost 40 million fewer children than their parents did. You know, the parents had like 10 kids and, you know, they might have had 3 or 4. You know, like my dad has you know, three boys, and then you turn around and look at me having one child. Hughes has one. Holloway has two. You know, I look around my office. Everyone has two or less in the office. So, yeah, you kind of think, okay, what? Why did they have to institute some incentive to retire? Well, it's to make room for the younger people coming along. If you're just, you have an old fart sitting in his job, and you have 10 people behind him looking to take his job, what do? You offer an incentive to retire, and that's where the pensions came in. I mean, our retirement, you know this, our retirement is not our grandparents' retirement. I mean, for many, many American employees in their generation, a good job meant access to a secure retirement income that they could not outlive. Like my grandpa, he was a Bloomington firefighter, right? When he retired, he had a pension, and the pension, and firefighters still have pensions. But he had a pension that he could not outlive, and my grandma could not outlive. But employers, private employers, took center stage, assuming most of the financial risk of funding that retirement with employees, largely, that were removed from the process. Now, today, employers are far more likely to be more facilitators of retirement savings, playing a role to support their employees to start a plan of retirement down the road. But they're not going to do it for you, and that's where the disconnect happens. So if you think about this, my grandparents all had pensions, right? They worked for the same company for a long time, and the longer they worked, the bigger the benefit was. The older they got, the bigger the benefit was, and they would retire. Well, then many of the baby boomers, because back in the 70s, we kind of realized, the employer's like, people are living a heck of a lot longer than we anticipated them living. We're paying out tons of money to them at age 90 when we thought they would be gone by, you know, 70 or whatever, and we need to do something about it. And that's really where the script flipped. Benefits grew rich over time. Pension plans offered replacement incomes that covered more of the employee's average pay. In fact, in 1970, the year of my birth, 26.3 million private sector workers, 45% of all private sector employees were covered by some kind of a pension plan. Then participation steadily fell, and we got down to 43% by 1990, which was kind of surprising to me it was even that high. So with these traditional defined benefit plans, which is you work and here's your defined benefit, employees had little control over their retirement, so they didn't have to worry about it. So whenever their kids came along, the baby boomers, did they tell them, hey, you don't have a pension, right, but you have that 401k? You need to start saving. They didn't do it because no one told them they needed to do it. But it's interesting, the boomers, how they have instilled that in their kids, right? So when their kids went to work in their 20s and now technically, you know, close to 30, I guess, what did you say? You have to start doing this right now. No one told them that. If you're sitting here listening to this and you're, you know, 60 to 65 years old, think back. You know, when you first started working, did you have a retirement plan? You probably did if you work for a big employer. Did anyone hold your hand to the paper and sign you up? Probably not. They probably just said, oh, this is an option for you, but you didn't think about it. But your parents weren't there, and no one else was there to say you need to do it. So really what happened was, back in 1978, Congress passed the Revenue Act of 1978, which, by the way, anytime Congress passes something that's called the Revenue Act, that means it's probably bad for you. That's when the Section 401k cleared the way for the establishment of defined contribution plans. Now, the idea was really pretty revolutionary. Employees would be able to contribute their own money, wow, in a tax-advantaged way to an account to supplement other retirement benefits, which also had some tax incentives for employers to contribute as well, right? They could deduct it. Now, the upshot, over the past 38 years, a typical U.S. employee took on the responsibility for developing a sustainable retirement income that shifted off the employer's plate. Now, that's the upshot for the employer, not for the employee. So that's where we sit today. Almost everyone has 401k plans, so there isn't any real incentive any longer or a set date. And this is where the age 65 or whatever it is came into play, because they would say at age 65, you could have a full retirement, right? And people say, well, yoo-hoo, let's do it. So at 65, they'd flip the switch, hang up their badge, give their keys back, and head out the door. Well, that mindset of 65 has been so ingrained in people all the way back, if you think about this, I mean, we go back into the 1800s and talk about pensions. Like, they were offered to retiring soldiers. We did it with the Civil War as well. You didn't have to be 65 to get it necessarily back then. But that was the mindset in the, you know, in the 40s, 50s, 60s, and even in the 70s that, hey, once I get to this age, then I'm going to retire. Well, then everyone thought, well, that's where I have to retire. Just now do I feel like that's finally switching, where people are like, no, I don't have to retire at 65, 66, 67. Everyone now ties the retirement age to Social Security. Well, now full retirement age for most people is 67. So is it 67 you're going to work to? Well, I don't know. It's up to you. You know, it's not up to anyone else to tell you when to retire. So to me, that's the upshot for the employee, is that it gave you more control over how long you wanted to work, right? Now, I'm not saying that it's a good deal or bad deal or anything in between, but I can tell you the baby boom generation is the one that got a really late start, because no one told them until, for some, it was way too late, what you needed to do to prepare for retirement. But just like many things in life, we have to have people experience them. We have to be advocates for other people, and we have to step up and say, you need to do this now. I would encourage you to, if you have a chance, I did a talk, I think it was around 5-6 years ago, at the Harvard Faculty Club. And there's a whole story behind it. And if you watch it, you'll think I did a pretty good job. I laugh when I watch it, because I know how I didn't even go in prepared for it. I just kind of scripted it out on the airplane, what I wanted to say. But it was on the retirement readiness in America and what we needed to do. Well, it took these paternalistic or maternalistic employees, or I'm sorry, employers, to say, you know what? We have to do more for our employees. Now, not contribute more, but educate them more. Show them what they need to do, but then also make them do what they need to do. Now, I've always been a person about personal responsibility. You know, if you were around me much during the COVID thing, that's all I talked about, was I'll be responsible for myself, my family, my business, my community. I don't need anyone else to take care of me. I'll take care of it, right? So I'm all about personal responsibility. Those of you that know me know that. But sometimes, and this is where, you know, the government's like, okay, well, we know that you can't take care of yourself, so we're going to do some things and make you do the right thing. And that's kind of where I'm headed with this. It's to say, you know what? We need to make people enroll. We're not going to make it an option. You have to enroll. The problem is they don't make them enroll at a high enough level. We want you to have auto escalation. We want you to have auto investments. We want to make this so easy that you can't hardly screw it up even if you tried. The only way you could screw it up is to say, nope, I don't want to be in. Well, it's been proven that less than 3% of people have ever opted out. But when you opt in, we have this huge amount of people that just say, no, I'm not participating in the 401k. What? Why? Well, I don't know. I need the money. You know, you can't afford not to. So we've made these provisions. We've made these rules, these changes, which are all good, but they need tweak. They need to make sure that people that put money in automatically enroll, don't put it into the tax-deferred side. Put it into the Roth side. The employer will put money into the tax later side. Make sure that we put them on a path to succeed, not a path to fail, by saying, you know what, the match is 3%. I put 3% in, I got the full match. That's not even nearly enough. You need to put in that 10% or more, depending on your age or where you are with your age and stage of life. So there's just so much going on, but it's interesting when you go back and look at the history of retirement, you get an idea of why we did it the way we did it, which I understand, when the change happened, which, by the way, is the Revenue Act of 1978. You notice now every act doesn't say that. Every act now is, oh, the, you know, Make Your Life Great Act of 2021 or whatever it is. They don't say, because they know that there's a lot in words. But nonetheless, they said that, and that's what happened, and that's where we are today. So if you didn't know it by now, folks, we are in that yo-yo world, as my friend Ed Slott always says, which stands for you're on your own. But you're not on your own, because I'm here with you, and hopefully people around you have supported you and told you make some good choices when it comes to all this. We'll be back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Man, I'm way over time. I apologize. I still have to take a couple more breaks, and we're getting close here. So, hey, I wanted to do a segment on, you died with an IRA, now what? I had actually had a conversation with another financial advisor about the new rules when you have IRAs and you have started taking your required distributions and you pass away and it goes to an eligible designated beneficiary or a non-eligible designated beneficiary, which is for most people like their kids or grandkids. How does it work, right? Well, when I have time to talk about this more, I'll talk to you and tell you that the Roth is king again. So there are no good outcomes when you die with an IRA and leave it to it in a non-eligible designated beneficiary because the taxes will be huge. The taxes will be wanted soon, not later. And that's why Roth is king. So let me take a quick break, come back, try to get another segment or two in. It's Your Money with David Hayes. So I promised Jeff Levine would be on my show today, which I believe is the heir apparent to my friend Ed Slott, the guru of IRAs. And Jeff and I tripped up on our schedules, so we have pivoted, and we are now going to have Jeff on the week of 4th of July. So I talked with him last night at my home, and we discussed what we're going to talk about, and I will assure you that it will be a tremendous treat. And if you've had any chance at all to listen to podcast 2025, The Final Drive, What You Need to Know to Win, I hope you're enjoying those. I did number 20, which will be out next Monday. I'm going to actually record number 21 tonight. And tonight, after this show, I'm going to be recording on other podcasts that I would encourage you to listen to because it's not all about me and my podcast. It's about getting the word out, right, on where we are today, where we're likely to be in the future, tax-wise. And if you don't believe that, look in the past and then what you need to do to be taking care of the situation right now. And that's why the tax code that expires the year 2025 gives us a real opportunity to do things today to get out of the crosshairs of much higher taxes down the road. And I hope you enjoyed the podcast on why age 75 for RMDs. Again, this isn't official yet, but it sure looks like it's headed that way, that required minimum distributions will start at 75. Well, why? Well, I give you a really compelling reason and another compelling reason to say, oh, wow, I see it. I need to do something about that right now, and that's do Roth conversions. So listen to that podcast if you get a chance. All right, let me take a quick break again. I apologize for running over earlier and running so quick for these last few segments, but, hey, these are called money breaks. We'll be back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. So I come to every show, like, with a ton of stuff. I mean, it looks like someone's just wrestled around on this desk and threw papers everywhere, and you can hear me rattling them in the background. So that the good news is there's a lot of stuff I didn't get to get into that I get to talk about down the road. So next week I'll actually be in Nashville, Tennessee for a conference on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, but I'll be coming back Wednesday night. So I will be live in the studio on Thursday. And really, quite honestly, I don't have a prepared program yet for next week. I normally have a concept of what I'm going to talk about for the next week or two, and sometimes longer. But I really am super excited about going to this Mastermind Collegium, which I'm part of. It's the best of the best around the country, getting together and just discussing things. And I always joke that you want to be around people that know things. And if you're around people that know things, you learn things, and then I can bring those to you. And I'm going to do that next week. So I can't give you any insight on what that really means, but it certainly leaves you as a cliffhanger for what next week will come. Hey, I hope everyone has a great weekend. It's Hayes Boy Campout Weekend at West Bug Park in beautiful Agote, Indiana. So if you're down there, come by and say hello. It's been Your Money with David Hayes, everyone. Goodbye. The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.